Bob and I, for years, have talked about building a supportive, inclusive, diverse workplace. And that's gotten a little bit harder in the remote first world that we live in. So we want to visit and talk about specific ways that you can foster environments like that. And my good partner and friend, Robert Galen, aka Mr. Galini, has some key points for us. So Bob, let's get this party started. Do you have one big one that kicks us off?
I don't know about a big one, but the first one on my list, Josh, is I'm thinking how you, and this is the context here, Metacasters, is leadership. So how does leadership foster this environment? What are things that we right. could do as leaders? I thought about onboarding. All right. I thought about the notion of really leaning into, as a leader, the onboarding process, not just you personally, but how are you setting up onboarding to your group, to your organization? And I think about things like welcome. Are you welcoming people? How do you welcome them? I thought about culture and not, do you share with them the culture? Like someone coming in, and this could be hiring someone or someone transferring in. They don't know what culture you're trying to shape. So do you communicate that, right? You know, as part of the welcome. This is what our culture is. And this is the part I'm hoping you play in the culture. So you talk about, you know, co-creating that. You set them up with a mentor or someone, a partner, mentor. And these are just things I think of. And you set expectations. That could be part of the culture, but setting expectations of what are you looking for? What's the role? What does a home run look like? Things like that. So that onboarding, and I don't know, it's been over a decade since I was hired, Josh. So I don't know if people are doing, you know, like really great jobs in general of onboarding anymore. Yeah. Maybe every company does it. You would know more than me, but that's my first, yeah, that's my first one.
You've seen companies, and you see it on LinkedIn, people posting this like package that they get the week before they started yeah. a new job, which is even more important in a remote world because you're remote. So now you have that company branding, you have that thing, you have that cup, you have that t-shirt, you have that mug. It sets the tone for like, hey, you're more than just an employee here. We want you to be a part of our company 24/7. And so those care packages, I think, do a tremendous service in just welcoming someone beyond the normal. But also post-COVID, when I was hiring, we had to work really hard with the onboarding piece because onboarding remotely is so hard yeah. because you don't actually meet people. And the way that we worked it out was we had a 30-day window, 60-day window, and a 90-day window, and we had themes. So, hey, your first 30 days, here's the people we've set you up to speak with. Yep. This is all their roles. This is why you're talking to them. They're prepped and ready. They're excited to talk to you. The goal for that at the end of these 30 days is that you have a clear understanding of who we are as a company and how cross-functionally we work. Of course, you're up and running in your day job and everything, but now you have clarity on understanding who we are. Next 60 days. Okay, these are the first projects we're going to put you on. This is who you're going to work with. And the goal is to be able to give a 20-minute presentation to your teammates about blah, blah, blah. Nothing crazy, but at least giving them clear goals and tactics. And most importantly, giving them all of the breadcrumbs to be able to execute that in an unknown world, because they're coming in and they have no idea who these people are. There's so many things, they don't know how it works. And that, we had really great feedback. In fact, I even heard things of, this is the best onboarding experience I've ever had. And that was gratifying, but also really important because it was literally, let's see, it was 6, sometimes 8 months before they physically met someone that yep. that they worked with as a part of that company because of the things that were going on within the world. And that might be normal now for some companies, where companies remote first only have a gathering once every 6 months. So you could start. And if the timing is magically good or bad, depending on how you frame it, you might not actually meet people for 6 months. So you have to what we historically would have called over invest. But now it's like, that's got to be the norm because the world has changed.
Absolutely. So I had forgotten, but you have much more relevant onboarding experience. And I appreciate that. It's crucial. And a lot of people blow the beginnings of anything, the beginning of a coaching engagement, the beginning of a job. Beginnings are crucial. And I still think I see more sucky beginnings from people than really these out. And there's sucky beginnings, there's average beginnings. But if you set the tone, if you set that home run tone at the beginning, mm-hmm. you actually get that performance from people. They get excited about it. And it's got an ROI from my point of view. It's got a real significant ROI. Massive. Yeah. The second one I have is, I think communicating, as I thought about this, communicating who you are as a leader and that you put the team first. I think a lot of people, a lot of leaders, either verbally or their, at least their behavior, they put the company, it's like customer first and business first. And I think if you're trying to set this supportive culture, I think a flip is, but the people are first. And that doesn't mm-hmm. mean, that doesn't mean you're not looking at ROI. You don't care about the business. You don't care about revenue. You do, but you realize you have this fundamental understanding that the people drive that, and you connect with the people and you set this tone. You set this tone that I'm here for you. Right. And I think that's part of onboarding, but I think it's ongoing in your actions. That I'm here for you and I'm supporting you and come to me. And I care about you before I care about ROI, or I care about you before I care about company results. What do you think about that one?
Yeah, part of our transition to increasing the onboarding strategy was each leader created a README file. So this is everything about Josh, your new leader. Yeah. This is how Josh thinks. These are the oddities. These are the things that I've heard are just weird and sometimes challenging to work with Josh. Just so right out of the gate, you know who I am and you understand how I work and how I tick so that you're not guessing. Again, because we might not meet for 6 months. But also for me, right out of the gate, I hit very hard about I am team first. I am team centric and all of those important things. So right out of the gate, I ensure that they know that, along with like, okay, how do I deal with this, you know, slightly odd fella that's right. Josh, that, you know, maybe he works a little bit differently. And I kind of like it, but it's different than some of the folks I've worked with or for in the past. So that's been a very important thing, is like clearly articulating who I am as a leader and how we work best together. Again, because people are trying to figure that out. So just invest up front. Now, a key thing you have to do is you have to know who you are. Yep. There are some leaders where first step is like knowing who I am and what my core values are and things I won't budge on, like team and people first and everything like that. So step one for some folks that are listening to this now might be like, gosh, how do I define myself as a leader? And you're going to have to invest some time. Cause I remember working on that file and it was a challenge. But once I invested in it, again, it was one of those things where members of my team became more successful because I was enabled to empower them with that. And now it's a part of any time I work with anybody, that's the first thing I send them. I was like, hey, this is about Josh. This should help give us a shortcut around working through things and it'll put us in a better spot. And other leaders that I've worked with have started to adopt that as well.
Those READMEs can be effective. I have a Agile Moose README on my Agile Moose site. And it really gives insights into me, how to interact with me, what gets my attention, what doesn't get my attention, things like that. I find it, and I think it's useful for, I point clients and things at it. A third thing that comes to mind for me, and again, it's this supportive workplace. And this is something you have to wait for. You have to wait for the opportunity. So let's say someone is having a baby, and they're struggling with HR, or they're struggling with benefits, or they need some extra time off. So that's a case where there's an opportunity for a leader to step in to support them. Another example would be a death in the family. Someone has a death in it, or someone's going through a divorce, or there are these life events that occur that I think are opportunistic for a leader to walk their talk and to step in and to not just say we have a supportive culture, but to be a supportive culture. And I'm not saying leaders as therapists or leader as psychoanalyst or anything like that. I'm just saying leader as support artist or supporter. And if you latch, there are opportunities that you can either blow or take advantage of, right? I don't think there's any middle ground. You either step in, you either miss it or you step into it when they occur. And again, you don't create them or anything, but you're there and you step in directly. And I think what that does is it starts setting this foundation of, look at the support this leader is willing to create opportunistically, whenever. And you don't have to do everyone, but it starts snowballing in the organization. So I guess my message would be, how do you create that or foster that? You don't miss those opportunities. And they could be even as small as someone needs to go to a school play with their kid, mm-hmm. something like that. And you step into that and you're like, and they're like, oh, we have a release. And I'm like, oh, you have a school play. We gotcha. Just get the heck out of here virtually and we'll cover you or whatever, but really like encouraging that. Any reactions to that, Josh? What do you think?
Absolutely. Having gone through a divorce, years ago, the impact I felt from the leaders across the organization that I was working with at the time, at how they were supportive of me. And it was one of those situations where they admitted, Josh, I don't know how to help you, but I'm here to help you. Whatever you need, we're here for you. Here are the tools we have. Here's all the opportunities we have with some of the benefits, everything to seek help, whatever that is. They were there for me in an instant. And that was a life changer. It was one of those things where those are people that I knew cared and that will be a part of my life story forever. And the impact that they had in enabling me to work through that, it was massive. And that was a special company, a special group, and they were special because they did things like that. Yep. And so, yes, there are those big moments that, to Bob's point, you have to nail them. If you don't, then the only option is you don't handle them well. And that again, unintentionally sets a tone that you likely don't want. You aren't creating that supportive, inclusive culture that we're talking about, that these number of steps we're talking about are all about. And I want to highlight Bob's last point about the little things. I think there are so many times where you as a leader need to highlight and support people doing family first things. Those things like that, make sure that people know how important you believe that to be. Also, another thing you can do is model those things. You can be the one that, as the leader, that steps out and says, like, hey, I'm not going to be here this afternoon. My youngest son has a play or whatever, and I'm really excited to go see it. So I'll see you guys tomorrow or next week or whatever the answer is. So yes, you can create those because you likely have them within your life, and make sure that people see you and understand that you believe in that, because then that empowers them to feel more confident in taking that step. So yes, there's opportunities that are going to pop up, but also there's opportunities within your life where you can model the right behavior. So please, please take advantage of that.
Absolutely. I mean, that was one of the ones you just took, one of my additional ones, Josh, which was the, and it's, no, it's related. It's the modeling.
Yeah.
It's the flip side of everything. And I think that's an important, related to another flip side to that, but I think it stands alone. A lot of leaders, in my experience, they fall into this trap of, well, I can't do this because the system has a constraint for me.
Oh, yeah.
There's a rule in HR, or there's a budget constraint, or we can only give you a computer once every 3 years, or we only have 3%, whatever. There's all these system constraints. and I think to create a supportive organization, and a lot of managers, in my experience, most managers, they look at those and they don't push on them. And I think you have to, in order to create this supportive environment, you have to push on the norms. You have to push on the systems. There's an old term, I don't know if even people use it anymore, manager's discretion. And there, it may still exist. I mean, the term is managers, there's managers hitting the rules, and then there's managers have discretionary power. But a lot of managers are afraid to take the discretionary power. And I used to push the crap out of discretionary power. But what is it? Something and ask for forgiveness is another phrase, right?
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So don't ask permission, just do it and ask for forgiveness. So I think that's, I'm suggesting that you got to push the norms, and people see that and they appreciate that. You stretch things and you're almost be fearless as a leader and not worry about, do the right thing for supporting the people. And I think that's another one of these cases where people will react back with that. Josh?
Yeah.
Reactions?
There's a tremendous power in people knowing you will go to bat for them.
Yeah.
That's what people really yearn for is, hey, this person has my back. And there's a situation that isn't exactly like all the others where it fits within the rules. And the easy thing would be to just kind of roll over and say, yeah, sorry, we don't support that. As opposed to being that fearless leader that is willing to go to bat for somebody and go and fight for that extra money, the extra whatever it might be. And the return you get from that is, again, as Bob said, you're setting that fearless culture again, where people start to go to bat for each other within your teams. Again, this modeling thing will just steamroll and become such a powerful force that when people know that you're willing to buck the trend and fight for them, they'll do the same for you and for your peers. And when you get a group that bands together like that, just the value in that, in just as hard things come at you, right? We talk about creating a supportive environment, and the real value is when the environment starts to support itself. So all these things that we're talking about, allow those teams to support themselves when something goes askew, or there's a new thing that comes out of left field and we have to do a 180, and people don't table flip. They're like, okay, cool. How are we going to figure this out? Not only is it supportive, but that support creates resilience within your teams that really enables success over the long haul. So that's some of the ROI that's there in just enabling the amazing people you have to do even more amazing things as they band together.
One thing that I was thinking about is giving as much flexibility. So sometimes as leaders, we describe the outcome, but we also describe the how to get there, or what are the optional paths to get there. And I think it's just be outcome focused or be result focused and then get the hell out of the way. So support the wild, crazy, innovative, wild ass. You don't even know. Oh, I don't even know if that's going to work. Just create this culture where you're supporting wild ass ideas. Now it's not just doing anything. It's not the inmates run the asylum, but here's what we're trying to achieve. But then really create this space where I support any way to get there. And it's almost like counterintuitive, and amplify the craziest ideas or the most innovative ideas. Those are the ones you'll applaud the most, because they're like, oh my God, look how I never thought that would work, and it worked. So I want to hear Josh's take on this, but I think it's like create this flexible ecosystem.
Yeah.
What do you think, Josh?
I'm very excited to say these next group of words together. I have a blog post about that.
Dude, no. Oh no. Do you really? Come on.
Yeah. It's a story about I had a team that were delivering effectively at 100% capacity or whatever, like sprint over sprint over sprint. I'm like, come on, people. Like this isn't realistic. We aren't trying. Like if we're this consistent, something's not happening here. So I really invested in failure is always an option and really tried to encourage us to try new things. Now, you know, a term I like to say is that it over-rotated a little bit. So we just failed everything. And they were like, Josh, look, we failed. Isn't that amazing? I'm like, yes, it is amazing that we failed, but we, you know, we're kind of here to win. So let's like fail in support of continuous winning. So I had to correct a little bit, but it was one of those things where, yes, I had to retrace some of my steps, but that again created that culture where there was empowerment, where there were crazy ideas that were thrown out that we tried and we adopted because even though they were crazy, they were amazing and they changed things for us. And otherwise you just get in this rut and you just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And that slowly fails because if you're just doing the same thing over and over again, your competition, you have to assume that they're getting better. So if you stay here forever, you have to assume that your competition is growing or speeding up or doing whatever. So if you're not improving, you're falling behind. And the only way to improve is to try new things and stretch and fail and stub your toe and do all of those things. But again, you have to empower the people to be able to fail. And yes, that's scary, but it really does pay off when, you know, orchestrated the right way and not, you know, as crazy as I went.
Absolutely. My final one is to genuinely care. And I think a lot of leaders, they fake it. So what are the models or the phases? There's I don't really care. There's fake it till you make it. Then there's genuine caring. And again, you can grow. But what I'm trying to say is people can smell it when you're just faking it. People can tell. Yeah, there is no one that's listening will ever listen to this metacast who will be able to fake it to the point where people think you're genuine. They will only think you genuinely care and you genuinely support them if you genuinely care and support them. So, and it's harder virtually. Part of this is in this digital world. So everything we're talking about in this cast is hard face to face and much harder virtually. But somehow you have to get it. People have to realize that you care. I'll pick on Josh. I think Josh has a genuine persona, and people, they won't always agree with him, Josh and I will argue, et cetera, but I know Josh cares about me and I know I care about Josh. So you got to get to that genuineness. And if you get to, it doesn't have to be smushy. It doesn't have to be, it's just, we care about one another and we support and we model that and we set it and it has to be genuine. So work on your genuineness. And part of that is showing the vulnerability of letting it out, right? Letting it out that, you know, a lot of leaders are like, I can't say I care about them. There's a variety of factors, really. I don't want to establish a relationship, et cetera. What if I lay them off? There's fear and uncertainty, you know. Get through that in order to create this supportive environment. Josh, go ahead and land it.
The key word that you used there repeatedly was show. And it is, even as we talked about, it's more difficult in a remote world to show and not just tell. It gets very easy to have it just feel like you're just saying words. That evidence of actually those actions are more powerful than words and things like that. Yes, it's harder to see and feel the actions in a remote world. So I'm not saying you like overdo your actions, but just accept the reality that it's easier to get into a tell mode in a remote world because that's all you have. But you really do have to invest in like showing the care and having those actions that back that up. Bob and I know we cared about each other because of the actions that we've done, the times that we've gone into uncomfortable situations or had the discussions or done whatever we could or gone out of our way to just help somebody. that's how Bob and I know the care we have between each other, because of the actions. And yes, there's times where we say it, we probably don't say it enough. And if we do, it's kind of awkward, but that's just kind of how Bob and I are. But Bob and I know because of the actions that we've put in place. And so that's the real challenge for leaders in a remote world, is having those be tangible and really felt. And you can't ask for credit for them. It's like, you can't do that. So you just have to continue to execute and show and put those actions into practice.
I'm going to try to drop the mic and say, if you don't care, if you don't genuinely care and support your teams, again, in the context of Metacast leadership, this episode, then you need to get the heck out of leadership, right? You're going to be an ineffective leader. You may drive some artificial results, et cetera, but you're going to lose people. You're going to lose your best people. They're going to be able to sense that. So genuine, that's leadership. It's not an option. It's not an option. You need to support your groups. You need to genuinely care about your groups or whoever you're interacting with, your peers, et cetera. Otherwise, get the heck out of the kitchen. So with that...
I think the kitchen might kick you out.
Yeah.
Because your success won't last, right? You might have that flash in the pan, but for real lasting success as a leader,
absolutely,
these are requirements.
Absolutely. So, Metacasters.
Yes.
From beautiful downtown Cary, North Carolina.
And beautiful downtown Fuquay-Wave Arena, North Carolina.
I'm Bob Galen.
And I'm Josh Anderson.
Shake.
And bake.
Take care, y'all.